You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK. The Punt Podcast, in association with the FWA.
Genuinely wants to spend the rest of his career at Tottenham Hotspur. I think he's mad.
I'm sorry, how can he escape flash? It's unbelievable.
Mercy.
So this is an obvious snap. It's a team in great form at home against a team who just aren't that good.
I think he'll score some goals in League One in 17-10 any time. Deadly from set pieces and in the air.
Bosses up for manager of the month. They've been phenomenal. They're odds against. Love it, love it, love it.
Subscribe to The Punt on iTunes, listen on Audio Boom, or look out for the link on Twitter or on William Hill's Facebook page.
Hello and welcome to The Punt Podcast, here with William Hill, Alex Dunn in the presenter's chair in place of Dave Kellner, but Andy Excel is still here. So is Derek McGovern, and we'll be hearing from award-winning Daniel Taylor shortly as well. From The Guardian, we'll be talking about the Premier League top scorer race and also the woes of Arsenal. Hi, Andy.
Morning. The woes of Arsenal. Yeah, everywhere, every turn, every corner I go around, there's somebody waiting to see me.
Yeah. Why do you think that would be then? Is it because your team were comprehensively outplayed slash lack the fight for a cup final, or something else?
Do you know the best thing about that game was I didn't see it. I was at a family birthday. It's the only time I'll be happy to have been at a family birthday instead of watching a cup final.
He sounds like Arsene Wenger, doesn't he? I didn't see it.
Yeah. Yeah.
The London Eye, I call him Arsene Wenger.
No, every report I've heard, and I've seen one or two highlights, which aren't even highlights. So just write it off and hope for better in the future. That's all I can do.
Yeah. Well, we are recording this prior to Arsenal Man City take two, so we're not going to focus on that too much. We are going to look ahead to the weekend's games, even though the game on Thursday night obviously will have a bearing on the weekend. We're going to do our best to get by without it. And we've got five games to go out that are televised. Hopefully they all go ahead. Obviously the weather has been pretty woeful up and down the country. Fingers crossed, listeners, that you're staying safe and that we can actually have some football to look forward to at the weekends. We'll start with Burnley Everton. This is Saturday at 12:30, and is one of those games that you really don't know what to make of it, because you've got a Burnley side who have been in pretty shocking form, winless in 11, against an Everton side who are probably just pretty shocking anyway. Burnley are 6-4, the draw 19-10. Everton are 21-10. Derek, we'll start with you here.
Oh, God. On telly on Saturday. I mean, two bad sides, and I'll be doing. I'll be watching the other side. I can't watch this game. Sam Allardyce has blamed Everton's poor run of results on a set of tricky fixtures, particularly those between August and May. They're absolutely convincing nobody right now, and as he already talked, that he might not even last the season. He's got two strikers, Toten and Umar Nias, that Everton don't want. In fact, those two strikers, nobody wants. They're just as a team going nowhere right now, under a manager going nowhere, and you can't possibly look at them, especially their away record this season. I think they've won one away from home, which is absolutely atrocious. Burnley's form's fallen off a cliff. We remember early on in the season, Andy, we were filling our boots on Burnley at big prices at home. They were winning 1-0 every week. You couldn't back them now, even at 8-5, even though they're playing Everton. I've looked at this fixture trying to get an angle on it, and I can't. It looks all over a draw.
Okay. And you'd probably, I'd assume, just back the draw as well rather than a score draw.
Well, you know what? No, I wouldn't back a score draw. I can see this finishing 0-0.
13-2, 0-0.
Yeah. It's 13-2, did you say?
Yeah.
That's short, isn't it, for a 0-0, when sometimes you get 11-1? Dear me. Bookies never give it a chance, do they?
No, you just look at this game and it's uninspiring, Derek. The draw 19-10 in the outright market, and if you do fancy both teams to score on the game to be a draw, that's 16-5. Any advance on this being dull, Andy?
No.
Okay, good.
No, it will be dull. I'm going along the same line. If I was having a bet, I'd be on both teams to score no, which is a shade of odds on. So, you know, it is odds on, but it's probably going to happen. And a shade of odds on is probably all right.
Okay. Stat for you, though. Burnley have conceded 18 of their 25 goals this season in the second half of games. So Everton's highest scoring half to be the second half is 9-5.
Problem with that is Everton don't turn up for the second half.
Exactly, and it could well be the case as well that Everton don't score at all in the match, in which case you want to
lose. But even so, that 9-5 is big, isn't it? You know, you're looking at that stat, that's quite incredible.
It's priced up 11-4 first half, the draw even money, and the second half at 9-5.
It doesn't make sense. Why is the first half 11-4, second half 9? Doesn't make sense, that, does it?
No. Not particularly.
No, that's definitely that's great. Great stat finding. That was a good one.
Could be a way in. We'll have to wait and see. But perhaps not the most inspiring game to kickstart the weekend. But the tea time game on Saturday could well be. It's Liverpool against Newcastle. Liverpool are 2-9. The draw is 11-2, and Newcastle are 11-1. You have to go back to 1994 for the last time that Newcastle won at Anfield in the league. Since then, a lot of great games, a lot of woes. Rafa Benitez, of course, back at Anfield. And Mr. XL, I am going to this game on Saturday. My first ever trip to Anfield, weather permitting. I go more in hope than expectation, though. Is that fair?
If you sat behind the obstructed view, you probably sat behind Derek.
All jokes aside, I have actually got a restricted view ticket. But I believe you
can't get them at Everton. They're sold out, those ones, very quickly.
I think I'm right down at the front, actually, which, again, you might think great, but after 20-odd minutes, it might well be that I'm thinking, might just go in the concourse for a bit, have a beer or two.
It should be a decent game. I think Newcastle will go there and try and do what they've done before and play for a draw. They actually had drawn 3 of the last 4, and 3 of the last 7 meetings between these two have been a draw. So 5-1 the draw isn't the worst one you've seen. Newcastle plus 2 goals is odds against. It's not big odds against, but it is odds against. And if they can keep it tight, which they're going to set out to do, I don't think it's the worst one you'll ever see.
Okay. No, fair enough. Do you see a comprehensive Liverpool victory, Derek?
No, I mean, it's what Newcastle did against Man City, isn't it? They only lost that 1-0, wasn't it? And I went for West Ham with 2-goal start at Anfield last week, and things were looking really good for half-time. They could have even been ahead. West Ham got chinned in the end, by the way. But we know exactly what's going to happen. Benitez is going to go to Anfield. He's trying to quiet him down, not give anything away in the first half, maybe try and nick something in the set piece. I mean, they're outclassed, hugely outclassed, Newcastle. They've got a side, Liverpool got a side, hopefully of championship quality. Well, Newcastle have got a side of championship quality with a capital C, because they haven't bought anybody since they came up, and he's doing remarkably well to give them a fighting chance of salvation. I noticed that one or two Newcastle heroes have been quibbling and saying, old Newcastle heroes. I've been saying that the current players don't know what it means playing for Newcastle United. Well, I think they do know. It means they need a new agent because, it's not looking good for them. Liverpool are 1-4, 2-9. I can't touch that because whenever Liverpool have a great performance like they did against West Ham last week or they did that time against Manchester City, how quickly their terrible performances are forgotten. I'm thinking of the Swansea game, the West Brom in the Cup game. Those performances seem to be airbrushed out of history, and I can't, because they've cost me money, those kind of fixtures. I'm going to have to go with Andy here, and 2-goal start for Newcastle odds against. It's too big, because we know they're not going to give absolutely anything away, and Liverpool have, although maybe not so much in the second half of the season, have traditionally had trouble against teams like that.
23-20 it is for Newcastle, plus 2. Which is the way in for our pundits in that one. We'll move to Sunday's games then, and Brighton Arsenal is 1:30 on Sunday. Brighton 16-5, the draw 11-4. Arsenal are 4-5, which could seem like a fair price for the Gunners here, but Brighton are pretty solid at home. They are pretty hard to beat. And here's a stat for you. We'll start with you on this one, Andy, as you are an Arsenal fan. The highest scoring player in the league this season on that pitch is Glenn Murray with 10 goals. I think that's an indictment of how one problem that Arsenal have this season, and that's one of a few.
Well, yeah, and the other two are just simple stats here for me. Brighton are unbeaten in 5. They've won the last 3 at home. Arsenal have got AC Milan in midweek. They've not won away domestically in 2018, and their odds on. So I'm with Brighton.
Okay. There will be people that look at the 4-5 and go, yes, please, I'll have that.
Yeah, and there will be. But to me, like I say, all the indicators are Brighton are in more need of the result, even though they've had one or two good results recently. They're still going to want to win. Arsenal are looking elsewhere, probably over their shoulders more than anything else. Looking for a new agent possibly as well, some of them. But yeah, I could only be with Brighton.
Okay. But would you back him to win?
Yeah.
16-5?
Yeah.
Look at this. He does not want to talk about this at all. Derek, you might. Brighton, 16-5. Tempted?
Too right. Well, you mentioned that people would look at Arsenal, thought of having, and yeah, I'm having some of that. Which people are you on about? I don't know anyone who would think that, looking at Arsenal recently. This is not Arsenal. I mean, again, they're being priced up on the name. This is not the Arsenal of like 4 or 5 years ago, 6 or 7, well, maybe longer ago than that, because they've been useless for that long. You can't trust them. Away from home, their record is diabolical. They're meeting an informed team. They've probably been softened up on Thursday night by Manchester City. The only reason that you could possibly back them when you're thinking, well, Wenger can't possibly lose at Brighton because he's got to go then. He's got to have his players fired up. But I don't think so. Arsenal used to be, if you score two, we'll score three or four. Now it's, if you score two, we'll let you. That's how bad they are right now. And I think this is a very winnable fix. Anybody playing Arsenal has got a winnable fixture on their hands, apart from Arsenal. 16-5 Brighton is way, way too big. I'm on it all day long.
Okay.
The other thing I'd say about this game is they play Man City on Thursday night, and then they've got AC Milan next week. Which of the three games do they care least about? And it's this one.
Yeah. As ever, plenty of enhanced odds markets available on all of the televised games here at William Hill this week, and your odds markets as well, so make sure you do get involved with those. Man City-Chelsea is the other game on Sunday. 4 o'clock, the kick-off time for this one. Man City 8-13 as we record this. The draw is 16-5, and Chelsea are 4-1. Derek, this one could really go either way. Obviously, we are recording this prior to Man City's game on Thursday night. Whether that'll have a bearing or not remains to be seen, but it's not often this season that you'll get the chance to back Man City at 8-13 at home. Mm-hmm. That said, it still isn't a knock your socks off price, is it?
No, it isn't. Initially, I looked at this and I thought, 4-1 Chelsea. I think there was something similar when they were having real trouble at the beginning of the season and they played against Tottenham. And it was one of those games where if you lose this, the manager's out, and then they won 2-1. I think it was that game. I'm pretty sure they were almost 4-1. I couldn't let it go begging. Now, initially, I looked at this fixture and I thought the same, and then I thought, no. You know, Chelsea have given every indication of not being bothered in the league. It seems as though their players, I know it sounds ridiculous given that, you know, they've got to get in the top four, but it seems their players have got all their eyes on the Champions League and possibly even the World Cup at the end of the season. I think this is a gimme for Man City. I honestly do. Looking at Chelsea's performances recently, it's hard to have been impressed. You could argue that Manchester City haven't got it all to play for either, given that, you know, they've got the title pretty much wrapped up. But a game like this in front of their home supporters, no, they're going to want this. I think 8-13 City is a good bet.
Okay. Andy, the reverse fixture where Man City won 1-0 at Stamford Bridge, that was a real turning point in the season, if you like, in that that's when everyone really sat up and took notice and just went, do you know what, they're so much better than everybody else, because they won 1-0 on the face of it. You might go, ooh, that could be... They bossed Chelsea in that game.
Was that the De Bruyne goal?
Yeah, it was. And they were sublime in that game.
Yeah, they are basically that much better than everybody else. And I think 8-13 is a good price here again. Again, if you just take a couple of stats, City are 20 games at home this season, 1-18, drawn 2. Chelsea have won 1 of their last 7 away games.
Mm.
And like I've been saying all season, I don't think things are right at Chelsea. I think people are looking elsewhere. Derek said what I've been thinking about the Premier League and the World Cup, with as far as the players and the manager's looking for a new job already, and has really not been very secretive about it. So City want to get this league wrapped up as soon as possible, so then they can start thinking, how do we prioritise Champions League? So 8-13 is a good price.
Okay. So you're both happy just to side with Man City on the outrights? You wouldn't go any more exotic?
No, that's good enough for me.
Yeah, same here.
Okay. Monday night's game comes from Selhurst Park. Crystal Palace hosting Man United. Palace are 5-1, the draw 3-1. Manchester United are 11-20. This is a Palace side who have scored just one goal this season in the 8 games without Wilfred Zaha. That is a damning statistic, Derek.
It is.
Are they a one-man team?
Yeah, they probably are. Yeah, I mean, you can't quibble on too much about Zaha. Come on, he's only one team. But I would have to say that their record without him. You look at Palace. Every time I see Palace, I remember Liverpool when they were going through a bad time a long time ago, and I think Roy Evans was manager then, or maybe even Phil Thompson. And whenever players got the ball, they looked to Steve McManaman. It was just give the ball to McManaman. And he was great for a couple of years in those days. And they're doing the same. Palace are doing the same with Zaha now. And without him, they just don't look a threat. But how can you back it, Man United at almost 1-2? I can't. I mean, the manager, you know, we call him the special one. He's the special once. His days are long gone. It's a fixture that troubles me. Palace without Zaha are just bog standard. But how much are Man United? Are anything that great? You know what? I'm actually going to go for Palace with a goal start here because I'm just like that.
Okay. Palace plus a goal is 11-8. It doesn't seem too bad because they are good at home, Andy. They're hard to beat at Selhurst Park.
They have been, but they're so decimated with injuries. It's not just Zaha. If the players could get to hospital through the weather, they'd all be there. And United, in the last 10 meetings between these two teams, United have had 9 wins and 1 draw.
Mm.
So, you know, for all their failings, and they've got plenty, United, they'll be strong enough to win this game. And the playground bully, as I refer to him, Lukaku, who always scores against the weaker teams.
Yeah.
Well, he's recent weeks, he started scoring against anybody. So I wouldn't put you off him. So if you can combine United win and Lukaku to score, you're probably on the right lines.
29-20, that is, for Lukaku to score. That may well be enhanced prior to kickoff as well, if you take a look at the William Hill website. He was really good, Derek, wasn't he, against Chelsea last weekend?
Yeah, he was. I'm not a Lukaku fan, but yeah, he caught the eye. But you know, when you're going for the kind of money he's gone for, you've got to have a decent game every now and again, surely.
Fair enough. Right, what about best bets then? Because also on Saturday at 3 o'clock we've got Leicester, Bournemouth, Southampton, Stoke, Swansea, West Ham, Tottenham, Huddersfield and Watford, West Brom. Is there anything else jumping out of you? / what is your nap this week? Andy, we'll start with you.
I'm going to just go after my intro, one word, Brighton.
Right. Yeah. Fair enough. Brighten the nap then for Andy at 16-5. Derek?
Yeah, I knew Andy would go for that, and he's a bugger for doing that because that's where I was heading. It's a trappy set of fixtures, this. No easy pickings at all. But I haven't seen West Ham at Anfield last Saturday, although the final score doesn't look good for them. I thought there was a lot to like about West Ham. I'm 15-8 to win at Swansea, will do me.
Okay. And again, I think it's a trappy week. It's not the easiest, but I'll go with that Everton stat. So Everton, top scoring half to be the second half at 9-5 off the back of Burnley, who've conceded 18 of their 25 goals this season in the second half of games. Right, well, thank you for joining us, Andy. Derek, you stay on the line. We're going to catch up with the Guardian's Danny Taylor now. But first, we're going to hear the best bet in Europe with Sam Norris.
You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK.
We go again this week with the ever-reliable Juventus, who are in an actual title race for the first time in a good few years. 4 points behind Napoli, who continue to look superb. It's going to be a vital week for Juve, with a crunch game against third place Lazio on Saturday night before travelling to Wembley to take on Spurs a few days later. That being said, I can't pass them up at odds against this week. I can't see any sort of rested team with one eye on the Champions League. They'll need to roll out most of the first team for both matches. Lazio are having a good season, but they are beatable at home. Both Torino and Genoa have shown that in recent weeks. And even though we usually associate Juve with sparkling home form, their away form this season has been very good, particularly of late. 9 wins on the spin now in all competition on the road, and incredibly 8 of those have been to nil, with 7 of them featuring under 2.5 goals. So I'm torn between the two. Juventus win to nil is 13-5, and Juventus win with under 2.5 goals is 100-30. Against a good Lazio outfit, I don't see them conceding a hatful, but I do think Juve get a vital 3 points and keep up the heat on Napoli at the top of Serie A. The nap this week, Juventus to win and under 2.5 goals at 100-30.
Joined on the line now by Dan Taylor from The Guardian. Good morning to you, Dan.
Hi, how you doing? You okay?
Yep, all good. And you've had a cracking week, haven't you? You've won 2 awards at the Sports Writer of the Year Awards, the Sports Journalist Association, the Football Journalist of the Year and the Sports Writer of the Year. I mean, what a week. Congratulations, first of all.
That's very kind of you. Thank you. Appreciate that. And I mean, just spread the love. The Guardian did very well, to be honest. We also got Sport Website of the Year and also the Sport Newspaper. So I think, and Martha Kellner got Scoop of the Year with Sean Ingle, which is a joint production because of the Froome drug story in cycling. So thank you. I appreciate that. It was a good week for the Guardian in total.
So we've got to talk about we're going to start by talking about Arsenal, because let's face it, it's been an interesting few years for Gunners fans, and they seem to be going from one crisis to another of late. And I use the word crisis very loosely. Derek, we'll start with you here, because for all that Arsenal fans are critical of the way that the club is being run and results on the pitch, it still could be a lot worse. Let's not forget that.
I'm not sure that they could. There's such a gulf between the top six and the rest that if you're in sixth, you're not doing very good at all. I said at the start of the season that this could be the worst Arsenal team of the Premier League era. I don't even think they're that good. They're two favourites among fans still on Mesut Ozil. So lazy that in training on Wednesday he stood on a snail that had been following him around all day. And Jack Wheelchair, who couldn't get a game at Bournemouth. They're their two main men now. I'll face today when Arsene Wenger should have been sacked. It was 2011. They got beaten 8-2 at Man United. Now, if you class yourself as a big club, you don't get beat 8-2 by anybody. Could you imagine Real Madrid had that happening too? Or Barcelona, Liverpool, Man United? No, but it seems to happen at Arsenal frequently. Did you need any more signs then that this Arsene Wenger was a manager past his sell-by date? 7 years on now, things haven't improved, and you suspect another 8-2 defeat isn't far off, possibly even tonight against Manchester City. How long before Arsenal start looking for the new manager along the likes of Sam Allardyce and Alan Pardew? Because that's where they're heading right now.
Dan, you've got your ear to the ground, if you like. There's been murmurings of discontent for a while, but they're coming from the fans and less so from the club itself, aren't they?
Yeah, but that's been a situation for a while now. But I do agree with Derek to a certain extent. I'm not trying to sound wise after the event, but journalists, fans, pundits, this has been so predictable, really. This has been going on for a number of years now, and it's almost sort of Wenger clinging on defiantly. But I mean, whatever happens when they play Manchester City tonight, they're 27 points behind at the moment, and they look like a team that's 27 points behind. They're getting worse rather than better. And I mean, my fear for Wenger, as someone that sort of admired him and remember when his teams were amazing to watch, was that it's going to end bitterly for him. You know, he's not going to get the happy ending that he probably deserved. And it's kind of a mix of Arsenal's inadequacies and his own stubbornness, perhaps. And you know, he doesn't really have any fit. You know, he's not an Alex Ferguson who's got other interests in the world. You know, Wenger sort of just lives for the football. I don't think he can bear tearing himself apart. I don't think he'd be able to tolerate seeing another manager in charge of his club and, you know, his baby, basically. And, you know, he really should, you know, he could have had a much more dignified exit than, you know, they're 10 points behind Tottenham now in fourth position. Their only chance this season is the Europa League, which is a competition that Arsenal used to look down upon with disdain, really. So it just feels so predictable. You know, we could have all seen this happening. You know, there was absolutely no way at the start of the season Arsenal were going to challenge for the league. It's just entirely predictable, and it's a fix they've got themselves into because of their own issues.
Could you ever see Arsene Wenger managing elsewhere after Arsenal?
Well, he's always said that he would stay in football, but it feels weird to imagine it. It'd be difficult to imagine, say, you know, all the great managers who've been at clubs for 20-odd years managing another English club, for example. So I can't quite see that. I think he said basically, but I could certainly see him going to say PSG or ending up at maybe one of the Spanish clubs. But at the moment, why would one of the Spanish clubs actually want him? You know, managers. I'm always a believer that managers can be like players, if you know what I mean. They can go through spells of form. Wenger's peak years a long time ago now.
Yeah.
You know, he don't get me wrong. I don't think he's, you know, he's still got massive amounts of encyclopedic knowledge about football, and you know, his record is great, but I'm talking about a record of FA Cup wins now rather than challenging at the top properly. You know, they're getting worse and worse. I agree entirely with what Derek says there about the fact they're relying on Ozil, who has five or six good games and everyone suddenly raving about him and wanting him to sign a new contract and breaking the pacing at Arsenal. You know, Ozil would have gone somewhere else if there was a better offer.
Mm.
Jack Wilshere couldn't get in the Bournemouth team. I think Roy Keane slightly exaggerating when he says he's the most overrated player in the world, but he has an awful lot of publicity compared to his actual achievements.
Yeah.
And then he looked through the rest of the team. I mean, I thought what really summed it up was the goal that Aguero scored the other day in the final. When, I mean, the defending on that goal was just so kind of typically Arsenal now, what you expect, and, you know, chasing after the referee to complain about it, and Wenger complaining on to the fourth official. You just look at that, it's just basically one of their centre-halves being an absolute soft touch against a proper elite centre forward, and just it's kind of embarrassing, to be honest.
Yeah.
You know, you just remember what Arsenal used to be like, what the defence they used to have, and you just, you know,
yeah, pulls apart.
Well, I do sometimes wonder what Steve Bould is thinking on the. He doesn't seem to actually say a great deal on the in the technical area, but, you know, what is he thinking when he sees something like that? You know, and is that not perhaps something that he should be working on, or drumming into Wenger that the centre halves just aren't good enough? You know, Wenger doesn't spend big money on defenders. You look through his record; he just seems to have an aversion to spending a lot of money on defenders, and that is the key area that Arsenal could start with. Basically, it's not the only area they need to improve upon, but it's certainly a good starting point.
Derek, your views on Arsenal and Wenger are well documented on this podcast. Purely from a betting point of view, we've got betting on whether Wenger will be in charge for the first game of next season. It's 8-13 that he isn't, and 6-5 that he is. What would you be looking at there?
Well, the 8-13, it looks a better bet with each passing day. Arsenal have lots of passing days, but not many scoring ones, it seems. He's not going to be there. I mean, it would be inconceivable. He's presided over just failure for a long, long time now. The team is in an awful state. And you mentioned, you know, where could you see him managing somewhere else and, you know, at a bigger club? Well, no, because he's a busted flush. No big club would have him. It'd be like if you were a songwriter and you wrote the greatest song ever and you thought, who can I get to sing this song for me? I know. I'll give it to Madonna. Yeah, right. It ain't going to happen. Wenger's not going to get it. He's past his best. And I'll be surprised if he does go on to manage another team. But if he does, it'll be someone along the lines of Grampus 8, where he came from in the first place. And looking at the list of contenders to follow him, I'd rule out all the big names, you know, all the Ancelottis and so on, because I'm thinking, who'd want to take over Arsenal now?
Hmm. Well, that is the next question that we're going to go on to. Whether it is anytime soon or not, we do have betting available for the next Arsenal manager. So we'll go through them one by one. You mentioned Ancelotti. He's the 4-1 favourite to take over when Wenger does eventually leave. But, Dan, can you see Ancelotti being interested?
I can, actually. And I only say that because I know that he loved living in London, and basically he's told people that I know that, you know, he would very much like a return to London. So, but I do take the point that I'm sure he's looking down the Arsenal team thinking, this isn't really the team I was hoping it would be if this was a possibility. Because that team, whoever takes over, that team needs massive restoration work. You know, every area of that team. Starting off with the goalkeeper, to be honest, as well. They need a new goalkeeper, they need a new defence. Centre midfield was just, you know, implausibly bad the other day in the final. And I don't think you can rely on Jack Wilshere. Up front, you know, I'm not certain again. You know, isn't it? Basically, it's massive work that he's doing there, whoever it is. I think, I mean, Ancelotti, yes, obviously, got a great CV, but again, I'm just not, you know, I'm not sure there's anyone out there who's going to suddenly transform Arsenal into being a great team again, because they've had so many years of decay now. The team, you know, the squad and the just the whole kind of vibe about the place, you know, it's going to take some real work there to get it going again.
In terms of the rest of the market, it's then 6-1 for Diego Simeone and Thomas Tuchel. Leonardo Jardim is 8-1, 10s for Yogi Löw, 12-1 for Enrique and Allegri, 14-1 Brendan Rodgers, 16s for Dennis Bergkamp, Patrick Vieira and Thierry Henry. Bigger prices, the remainder. Derek, is there anyone there that you actually think would want the job and would actually be able to do a good job at Arsenal? Because, as Dan said there, it does need a fair bit of work doing.
Yeah, but the 16-1 Vieira makes appeal, doesn't it? More so than the Thierry Henry one at the same price, because Vieira's got a bit of, you know, a bit of a track record in management now, albeit only at New York City, but he's also, you know, been tied up with Manchester City as well. And, you know, he's the kind of player you would think that Arsenal would need, you know, well, the kind of manager, rather, that Arsenal would need, because I think one thing he would do is he would recognise the importance of leaders in a team, because he was probably one of the best of all time, and that's what Arsenal are so sadly lacking right now. I wouldn't put anybody off back in Patrick Vieira, to be honest.
Interesting. What about you, Dan? Was there anyone else on that list that was interesting?
Not hugely. I'm sure Brendan Rodgers would probably be quite interested in the job. I look down that list, I'm not sure that the greatest managers in the world at the moment would want to go to Arsenal. You know, the Chelsea job's probably going to be coming available this summer. Mm. So, you know, would you rather go to Chelsea, where you know that Abramovich could spend a fortune, and there's more of a semblance of a squad there to build upon? You know, it's not ideal at Chelsea at the moment. You know, they do need some players themselves, but they've also got, you know, Hazard, they've got people to work with. It's in a better position than Arsenal at the moment. So, you know, so I look down that list and I would say certainly the, you know, it's almost the other way around. Would those managers be actually that tempted by Arsenal?
Hmm. Well, you mentioned Brendan Rodgers there. Now, this is something that Dave, who normally hosts the podcast, has been talking to me out in the office about, Derek, and he was saying that he saw on Twitter, you know, the talk of Brendan Rodgers potentially going to Arsenal, saying that a lot of fans would probably rather Arsene Wenger stays than Brendan Rodgers comes in. Now, has his stock fallen so much? Because if you go back a few years when Liverpool were having that good season, he was hot property, and now he's Celtic manager, and he's sort of in no man's land managerially, isn't he?
Well, he is, and, you know, that was a tremendous season for Liverpool under Brendan Rodgers, but as each year has gone on, you'd be thinking, well, that year Liverpool played, nearly got won the title, was all down to one man, Luis Suarez. It wasn't down to Brendan Rodgers. I mean, you or I maybe could have gone to Liverpool, given the form Suarez was in that season, and got them into second place. It's not so much what he's done now. You know, he's gone to Celtic, and, okay, the winning games there, but big deal. It's just his... It's his demeanour, his attitude, and I've never forgiven him for that three envelope trick on the TV. Remember that Channel 5 documentary when he said, you know, there's three players here, I've got the names of in these envelopes, who's going to let us down this season? And the very first game of the season, they lost 3-0 at West Brom. I think he sent out for more envelopes that day. I think at Arsenal, he'd need a full post office delivery van for the players are letting him down. No, Arsenal fans wouldn't go for him. Arsenal wouldn't go for him. There are more likely candidates. No, it couldn't possibly be Brendan Rodgers.
Okay. Enough talk about Arsenal. We're going to talk about, well, a market that I'm sure Arsenal fans would like to have a player in, but unfortunately they don't this year. It is the top goalscorer market in the Premier League. Harry Kane is the 2-1 on market leader here. Mohamed Salah 11-4. Sergio Aguero 4-1 as we record this on Thursday morning. Kane currently 24, 23 for Salah. Aguero 21 prior to the league game against Arsenal. Tonight, as it's scheduled for anyway. They appear to be the only three, Dan, that you could get slightly interested in. Kane 2-1 on. He is pretty short, and given the way that Mo Salah's gone so far this season, he's showing no signs of stopping anytime soon, is he?
Yeah, no, I mean, I'd say Kane must be the favourites in that. I mean, the problem, I suppose, for Aguero in that is that Jesus is now back fit. So that's the issue with it, really. For Kane and Salah are obviously sort of first name on the team sheet for Spurs and Liverpool, whereas Aguero, when everyone's fit there, you know, he doesn't always start. You know, I think Aguero, if you actually look at their minutes per goal, Aguero's actually scoring every 85 minutes, which is... Actually, let me just check this. Kane's 97 minutes, Salah's 92, you know, so Aguero's actually the more prolific in terms of minutes on the pitch. But obviously, you know, if he's not on the pitch, he's not going to be catching them up, is he, really? So I find that it's a strange one for Aguero. He's now, I mean, if you add in his cup goals as well, he's got 30 goals now this season. It's the fourth time in seven seasons at Man City that he's got 30 goals. Yet he never gets a sniff when it comes round to the Player of the Year awards. He doesn't even get on the shortlist, which I never quite understand. But, maybe this will be the first year in all his years at City that he actually gets on the... get shortlisted.
For all that I said, Derek, that Salah at 11-4 may well be slightly interesting, and likewise Aguero at 4-1. Kane at two's on, for some people, they're going to think, well, hang on, that's a formality, isn't it? Particularly as if he is going to have a sticky period, it does tend to be at the start of the season, and then he warms up. And if you remember the end of last season, he went on a phenomenal run the last few games, didn't he?
Well, no, yeah, he will do. And you look at the remaining fixtures too, and Spurs still got Chelsea and Man City to play. But the other fixtures are gifts. You can see him getting a few hat-tricks because he generally seems to do that. And he's going to be playing in every game because Spurs have still got it all to play for, you know, to consolidate a top four place. Even if they go deep into the Champions League, they've still got that to play for. Whereas Aguero, you know, if they're still in the Champions League later on, which they will be, would he be rested perhaps, you know, for the Premier League games? Because, they've won it anyway. And also, he's injury-prone, unlike Kane. So when I looked at the odds, I thought, 4-1, Sergio Aguero, that's not bad, that. But for those reasons, I can't have him. The most surprising thing about the top goal scorers is that three of the four leading scorers in Europe, this is, Aguero, Salah and Messi, have beards. And what's going on? There used to be no more obvious badge of uselessness than a beard, apart from a West Brom shirt. And yet we've got three of the top players in Europe. I've got them. I don't understand what's going on. You mentioned before, Danny, about the goals-to-minutes ratio, and Aguero's is by far the best. And so you'd think a 4-1, you've got to give that a go, but I can't. I actually think Salah's is 92 minutes or 92 days if the ball's on his right foot. I would have to go for Kane because I think he's going to be playing in every game. He never passes. He's had about double the shots that Salah and Aguero have had because he's just a greedy sod. But I think at 1-2, he's a worthy favourite. And you know what? I actually think 1-2 is a very good bet.
Yeah, seems pretty fair. I know it's short, but it is pretty hard to see past anyway. Anyway, thank you very much for joining me. First to you, Derek. Thank you.
Pleasure.
And the same to you, Danny. And once again, congratulations on what's been a superb week for you. We hope to speak to you soon.
Yeah, no, that's great of you. Thanks for that. I appreciate it.
The weather may well be putting paid to some of the Football League action this weekend, but braving the elements, Pete Farries, Gav Puchalowski and Al Ross now with their best bets in the Football League for a depleted weekend.
So it's a bit of a tricky week this week. You never quite know what the weather is going to do. But I, Pete Farries, is going to try and find you the best bet from the Championship coming up this weekend. And in a tough week, I still think there's value to be found. That value, in my opinion anyway, goes the way of Nottingham Forest. Now, Forest are 10-11. I did Omanar over Brentford, phenomenal home form, but Cardiff playing very, very well away. I thought that Barnsley could be interesting at home against Norwich at a big price. Barnsley have got to win, and I liked Bristol City to beat Sheffield Wednesday, as well as Villa to beat QPR. But I've gone with Forest here for just one reason, really. Birmingham are struggling. Forest, of course, hit 5 past QPR last weekend. That was at QPR as well. But this isn't really about Forest. This is about Birmingham. Failed to score in their last 4 league games. Conceded 5 against Brentford, 2 at Villa as well, and while they got done by Barnsley, that kind of result is a result that tells you League One football is coming round the corner. Forest aren't phenomenal, but I think are turning around under Aitor Karanka. They got decent draws as well, and while they have lost 3 of the last 4 at home, they lost at Villa, sorry, against Villa, fair enough. They lost to Hull, not great. And they lost to Preston, fair enough. Outside of that, Forest, I think, are seeing big, big improvements after employing Aitor Karanka. Yes, you could argue the price at 10-11 is short, but I'll back it anyway. Forest, my nap of the weekend on this week's podcast. Let's go to Gav Puchalowski and his thoughts on League One.
My biggest nap selection this weekend will be Snow 1 Football 0. I think quite a lot of League One football could fall foul of the snowy conditions, but if this game goes ahead, I'm all over Southend at home to Walsall. Southend were struggling this season, got rid of Phil Brown, in walks Sir Chris Powell, and the guy has been magnificent in charge of Southend. He's been in charge for 5 games, they've won 4, and at home they've scored 3 in all 3 of his home games that he's been manager of Southend. 3 against Scunthorpe, 3 against Wigan, and 3 against Portsmouth. Southend have scored more goals in their last 3 home games than Walsall have in 2018 on their travels. Walsall away from home lost in very snowy conditions on Tuesday against Peterborough, while Southend had their feet up, and Walsall haven't won away from home since the 25th of November. So Chris Powell is doing wonders at Southend. If he wants to go on holiday to Europe, he can quite simply walk there over the English Channel, because he can walk on water, according to the Southend fans. I am all over Southend at 23-20 to beat Walsall. If this game goes ahead, Southend will win it for me. They are my nap selection. Looking at League Two, here's Al Ross.
There's a few prices in League Two that may take your fancy this weekend. There's only one, though, that makes your eyebrows shoot up, and that is Accrington, who are second favourites against Newport. Before we look at how ridiculously good Accrington are at the moment, let's take a look at how bad Newport are. Well, it's over 500 minutes of football since their last goal. If you don't score, you don't win. They haven't won their last eight. They have taken points recently in goalless draws, but with all due respect to third bottom Port Vale, for example, that was only one of 4 points that Vale have been able to take in 2018, and one of their only 2 clean sheets. So let's not pretend those are decent results for Newport. Accrington, meanwhile, they let us down on this pod 2 weeks ago with that 1-1 draw at Barnet, but that's no reason to stop backing them. Aside from a defeat at Crawley in late January, that was the only time they've dropped points in their 11 games since Boxing Day. 9 wins, 1 draw, 1 defeat in that time, scoring an average of over 2 goals a game, and now facing a Newport side who cannot score, and also incidentally have the influential Joss Labadie suspended. So if you can tell me why a team in second, 3 points off leaders Luton, are 7-4 to beat a side who've not won in 6 weeks, can't score for toffee, and yet are the shorter price at 8-5, I'd like to hear it. Accrington's Billy Key, 13-10, worth backing any time. He scored in 9 of their last 13 games. Strike partner Caden Jackson's in form, but he mostly nets at home. Also, Accrington have conceded just 1 goal in their last 4 games. So Accrington to nil, 100-30, that's a play. But why complicate it when the outright is so big? The nap is Accrington at 7-4.
Thanks very much then to Pete, Gav and Al, and also to Danny, Andy, and earlier on the podcast as well to Derek and Sam Norris as well for their contributions to this week's podcast. Make sure you join us again next week. Good luck with your bets this weekend. You've been listening to the Punt Podcast here with William Hill.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.